Thank you. That was beautiful. Our text today is from John chapter 8, and I was thinking about what to preach on. And the last several weeks, Ian has been working through the parable of the sower. And just as a reminder, it's from Matthew 13. We have four soils that we've been going through. We have first, seed that fell along the rocky path. Next, we have seed that fell along the rocky ground. Third, we have seed that fell among the thorns. And fourth, we have seed that fell on good soil. And this parable is listed in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it's kind of an interesting parable in that it's one that Jesus himself says, all right, well, here's the meaning. All right, I'm not going to leave you guessing. And after the parable in Mark chapter 4, this is what Jesus has to say. Is a lamp brought in to be under a basket or under a bed and not a stand? For nothing is hidden except to be made manifest, nor is anything secret except to come to light. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. And he said to them, pay attention to what you hear. So immediately following these parables, remember the fourth soil. But to those who are sown on good soil are the ones who will hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. And today we want to be this soil bearing much fruit. And so Jesus calls us to be this lamp that is not to be hidden. And for the last month, many of us here at Grangetown have been reading through the Gospel of John. So I've been in John a lot and said, I want to preach from John. And so thinking about how we are to be this light, I was led to John chapter 8. And most of us have probably heard a sermon before about Jesus being the light. We've been in church for a while. And just a reminder, here is what Jesus says in John 8:12. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And those of you who have been in the faith for some time, what you'll find is the Bible never ceases to amaze you. It never ceases to give you a new word. Read it one time or 100 times or 1,000 times. God continues to teach us. And one thing I noticed when I was reading this passage throughout the last week is what Jesus has to say to those listening. Listen to a few things Jesus says to the listeners. Verse 14, he says, you do not know where I come from. Verse 19, you do not know me or the Father. Verse 21, you will die in your sin. Doesn't get much stronger than that, does it? Right? You meet somebody, you say you will die in their sin. That's something. Verse 23, you are of this world. Verse 24, in case you didn't hear again, you will die in your sin. So Jesus has some very, very harsh words to say to the Pharisees here in John 8. So what I want to do today is I want to look at three things that God can teach us in John 8. First, I want to look at what exactly is Jesus' testimony here in these verses. Second, I want to look at the response of the Pharisees. And third, I want to consider today what is our response to this. So first, Jesus' testimony. Kind of in preparation for this, I was listening to a sermon from a friend of mine, and he was preaching on John chapter 3. In John 3, we have Nicodemus coming to Jesus at night. And if you remember this story, Nicodemus, the Pharisee, he comes to Jesus, talking to him, questioning him. And Jesus says to him, you must be born again, right? This famous phrase we hear a lot. And in preparation for that sermon, my friend asked his kids, if you could meet one person, who would it be? Right? So Nicodemus, he goes to meet the Son of God. If you could meet one person, who would it be? And his youngest son, who was about four at the time, said, I think I'd meet myself. Right? So out of everyone in the world, I think I'd like to spend time with myself. And that's how we often are, isn't it? We are the center of the universe, not Jesus. And as far as how this relates to this verse, this is a very bold claim Jesus is making to say, I am the light of the world. Out of the billions of people who have ever lived, out of the millions who were alive at this time, I here in this backwater of the Roman Empire, I am the light of the world, no one else. And so in many ways, can we be surprised by the Pharisees' response here? So first, it's just worth exploring. Who are these people who Jesus is saying, you are not of this world, you will die in your sin? You know, who are they? So a Pharisee is simply means one who is separated, a separated one. These are the teachers of the law. They're separated in the fact that they have time to study the law. They have time to reflect upon it. So they're separated in teaching. They're also separated in the fact that they remove themselves from those they considered unclean. So I'm going to stay away from people who were unclean. And so they saw themselves as keeping to Old Testament law, keeping themselves clean. So I know the Bible. I'm going to stay clean. I'm going to separate myself from other people. So the religious leaders are the ones Jesus is talking to. And so the Pharisees, in this case, they offer opposition to Jesus' claims of authority. How can you say this? And so Jesus gives, in many ways, a testimony of who he is. He says, I am. And there are seven times in the book of John where Jesus says, I am. The first one is, I am the bread of life. Here we have, I am the light of the world. In John 10, I am the door of the sheep. In John 10, we have, I am the good shepherd. John 11, I am the resurrection and the life. John 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And John 15, I am the vine. These are dramatic things to say. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the living water, as he says in John 7. So let's talk about what's happening here in these verses. If we back up just a little bit, and I said this last time I preached, I'm the kind of preacher that I'm going to keep you in your Bible. So if you have one with you, feel free to get it out or your phone out or whatever you need. Let's look at a bit at John 7. John 7, verse 37. On the last day of the feast, the great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scriptures have said, out of his heart will flow rivers of water. Now this he said about the Spirit, whom he believed in him were to receive, for as yet the Spirit had not been given, because Jesus was not yet glorified. In verse 37 here, you have a feast. And I don't want to get into this too much, but what's happening here is what's called the Feast of Tabernacles. And I'll talk about why this is important. This is a popular occasion where Jews would take long pilgrimages to Jerusalem, specifically to celebrate. This was generally a seven-day celebration. One Jewish commenter said this about the Feast of Tabernacles at the time. On the first night of Tabernacles, and apparently on each night of the feast except on the Sabbath, the worshipers awaited the signal of the special lighting of the golden lamps of Tabernacles in the Court of Women. The lamps were intended to remind worshipers of God's leading the people of Israel through the wilderness at night by a pillar of fire. So think back to the Old Testament. We have the people of Israel being led at night by this pillar of fire and by day by a cloud. The lighting of the lamps also signaled Israel's recommitment to the God of light, and it was accomplished by music of Levites and special dancing by men of piety. All right, so here, picture this. You have all these lights. You have the Israelites coming together to worship the God who led them out of Egypt and into their promised land. And amidst this celebration of light and darkness, what does Jesus say? He says, I am the light of the world. What does he not say? He does not say, I am a light. I am an enlightened one. He says, I am the light. The book of John begins with the concept of light. Think of John 1, 3 and 4. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Through Jesus, we have light, and through him, we have salvation. So Jesus is the light of the world is not only a statement of who he is, but this is a fulfillment of the Old Testament. I want to look at just a couple of verses. First, Psalm 27:1, the Lord is my salvation and my light. Whom shall I fear? Habakkuk 3, his splendor covered the heavens and the earth was full of praise. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from his hand, and there he veiled his power. Isaiah 49, is it too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved Israels? I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. So it's also interesting that this concept of light in the Bible, it doesn't just remain with Jesus, does it? What does Jesus say in Matthew 5? You are the light of the world, a city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. So we too are called to shine this light. And finally, Revelation 21, the end of the Bible. And the city has no need of a sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. By its light will nations walk, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory to it. And its gate will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. They will bring to it the glory and the honor of the nations, but nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Light. And what does the Apostle John say in his first letter? God is light, in him there is no darkness at all. So what does it mean to say that Jesus is light? What does that mean when he says, I am the light of the world? Light is a very common theme, light versus darkness, in many religions. What is particular here is Jesus speaks as the authority and as the one saying, I am the only light to which you can look. Both in Revelation 20 as well as here, 21, we have this concept of judgment combined with light. This is not just a happy day for the world. It's also saying you have to make a choice, right? Are you going to accept this light, or will you be separated? And how does he display this? There are times in which preachers may struggle to find a sermon illustration. Jesus gives the best sermon illustration I can think of in John 9, just a chapter later. What does he do in John 9? We have a blind man who comes to him, and he says, why is he blind? Did he sin? Did his parents sin? What happens? And what does Jesus say in response? As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. He then heals this blind man. And so this physical blindness, what does it do? It shows our spiritual blindness, right? We are blind apart from Christ. The Pharisees who had studied the law, they were blind here, and Jesus shows them the truth. So what is Jesus' testimony here? I am the light of the world. Next, what is the Pharisees' response? Look at verse 13 with me. John 8, 13. So the Pharisees said to him, you are bearing witness about yourself. Your testimony is not true. So what is their response? Think about this. What is wrong with their response? They're asking for a testimony, right? If this is true, show us how this is true. But they don't address the main question. Indeed, they do not speak of light or darkness at all. They fasten on to this technicality. You need an extra witness if you are indeed this light. They say there is no legal worth to your claim. So think about this. Jesus comes before them saying, I am the light of the world. And you say, well, if we were in a courtroom, that just would not have any legal bearing. All right, there's not another witness for you here. And this is what often happens when people face the reality of Jesus. I don't see it that way. I just don't think the evidence is there to establish that claim of truth. So it's interesting they try to use Jesus' own words to catch him here. Turn just a couple chapters earlier to John 5:31. John 5:31. Here we have John the Baptist witnessing to Jesus, about Jesus. And what does Jesus say? If I alone bear witness about myself, my testimony is not true. So what does he say there? If it's just me bearing witness, then this must not be true. He further goes on to explain that, and we'll talk about that. So the Pharisees are latching on first to Jesus' own words. Am I the only one bearing witness? Second, they're establishing themselves in Old Testament law. In the book of Deuteronomy, it says, and I think we would all agree this is quite logical, if someone is accused of murder, you need two or three witnesses, or the person shall not be put to death. Right? You need more than one witness. Right? If I think of my kids, if let's say something is broken in the house, and one child says, "You did it." Oh, really? Jane, did you see it happen? Augustine, did you see it happen? Edmund, did you see it happen? He's getting old enough; he can tell. He can tell on his siblings. So sometimes having a second witness can be quite helpful. So they're saying, who is this other witness here who we can look to? But think about this: who is Jesus? He's not just a man, right? Who better to witness to himself than God? So natural revelation, the idea that the world was created good and we can see good in the world, is very helpful. But here, Jesus looks to the Father as his witness. So they come on the offensive. Who is your witness? So you would expect somebody to be defensive, right? Jesus could say, well, why don't you ask the people who were at the wedding feast at Cana, saw water turn to wine? Why don't you ask the 5,000 who saw bread provided for them amidst crumbs? Why don't you ask the man at the sheep gate in Jerusalem who had laid there for 38 years? Those are some pretty good witnesses. But rather than being defensive, Jesus goes in many ways on the offensive. He says, even if I do bear witness about myself, my testimony is true, for I know where I'm going. I know where I came from. I know where I'm going, but you do not know where I come from or where I'm going. He speaks judgment to their ignorance. You simply do not understand the things of God, you teachers of the law. And anytime I read about a Pharisee or a scribe in the Bible, I have to think about myself as a religious teacher. What is Jesus saying to me as one who reads the Bible? How can this judgment come upon me, and how do I respond to Jesus in the face of this judgment? And so this is certainly not what the Pharisees expected. They were there to question him, and he made it clear they understood nothing. So what does Jesus say the problem is? He says in verse 15, you judge according to the flesh. And this use of flesh is something similar Paul uses. So Jesus knows his origin and his destination. I am the Son of God. I am returning to the Father. The Pharisees knew neither. So second, their response to the testimony. Jesus defends his authority in four ways. First, he looks to his mission, which we just talked about. I know where I'm going. I know where I come from. Second, he appeals directly to the Father's presence with them. Look at verse 16. Even if I do judge, my judgment is true, for it is not I alone, but the Father. So who does he appeal to as a witness? God the Father. Third, he speaks of where he comes from. Look at verse 23. You are from below, I am from above. You are of this world, I am not of this world. And finally, verse 28, he speaks to his death and resurrection. So Jesus said to him, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, that I do nothing by my own authority. For I always do the things that are pleasing to him. So what is the point of this discourse here? I think in many ways it goes to the concept of judgment here. So Jesus here, as the light of the world, in many ways is asking them to make a choice of judgment. The purpose of Jesus coming was not to condemn, but to save. That's John 3:17. Yet the very coming of Jesus sets people into divisive categories. You either accept Jesus as the light, or you keep questioning, saying, how is this true? I can't believe this is true. And so I want to think about this in our own lives. When Jesus comes as a light, how does it affect us? Do we feel that we ourselves are being a light to this world? We are called as witnesses to shine this light. So although the Pharisees plan to put Jesus on trial, in this case, demanding to know witnesses. Jesus puts them on trial, and here is the verdict. Verse 19. You know neither me nor my Father. So let us put ourselves in the place of the Pharisees today. If Jesus comes and judges us, is he going to say, you know neither me nor my Father? Or is he going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant? And so, Jesus tells them, I've told you over and over, verses 21 through 30. He said to them, so they said to Jesus, who are you? Jesus said, just as I've been telling you from the beginning. So Jesus continued to explain his mission to them. And their question remains, who are you? And so today we have to ask, who is Jesus to you? Is he a light or simply another a light? Is he the light or is he a light? And I think for those of us who are in the faith today, it's worthwhile. I thought a lot about verse 30 this week. Look at chapter 8, verse 30 with me. As he was saying these things, many believed in him. In this chapter, we don't have the Pharisees saying, you know what, I think he's right. I think this Jesus is the Son of God. But many who were listening indeed believed. So when we share the gospel with others, maybe there are times we're discouraged. I did a bit of door-to-door with the sister church this week, just sharing about Jesus, and we had several people. God bless them, who said, I don't believe any of that. And I'm just thinking, you are 80 years old and you're going to hell. God, you need the Lord in your life. You don't have a lot of time left on this earth. And so today, think about, what does this claim that Jesus is the light mean to us? We, as followers of Jesus, are able to keep in step with the Spirit. We are able to understand that God has come and he has transformed our hearts, and God indeed is able to transform the hearts of others, and many will come to know and to believe. I want to end with a quote from a theologian named Augustine. And the light that made the sun, under which he also made us, was himself made under the sun for our sake, i.e. God became flesh. The light that made the sun shining down, was made, I say, under the sun for our sake. He hid himself under the cloud of flesh, not to obscure, but to temper his light. Speaking then through the cloud of flesh, the light unfailing, the light of wisdom, says to humanity, I am the light of the world. The Bible tells us no one can see the face of God, and yet Jesus came as flesh so that we could see him. We have been given the Son. For those of us who follow the Son, what can that mean for our life this week? Thank you. All right.